Welcome to the ADAA podcast about treating children with trichotillomania, ticks, and Tourette syndrome. Today, we're talking with Dr. Martin Franklin, who is an associate professor of clinical psychology in psychiatry at the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine. He's also the director of the Child and Adolescent OCD, Ticks, Trichotillomania, and Anxiety Group at the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine, which is also known as COTTAGE for short. Thank you, Dr. Franklin, for coming in and talking with us. Can you describe trichotillomania and other types of so-called body-focused repetitive behaviors?
Sure. Trichotillomania is mainly focused on hair, so it's the pulling out of one's own hair. And in order to meet diagnostic criteria, you would also need to be doing enough of that where it results in functional impairment or bothers you a lot. There are other similar behaviors that you see sometimes in people, like skin picking or nail biting, cheek biting, things like that, that are often associated with trich.
So what kinds of functional impairment do you usually see?
I think there's a range, and what I'd say is the younger the person, the less functional impairment in the person who's pulling, but oftentimes you see the functional impairment there in the parents. But as kids get older, especially as they start to reach those developmental stages of 12, 13, where the peer group becomes really important, that's when you start to see kids really become very concerned about their bald patches and missing eyebrows and eyelashes, and can lead to them becoming socially isolated, really cautious about how they are around people, and the functional impairment increases to that point. And by the time we're looking at adults, we're often looking at people who have other disorders and a significant impairment in their lives.
Can you talk about the relationship to anxiety disorders?
Sure. I don't think trich is an anxiety disorder per se, and yet we've got, from our own data from an NIMH-funded study that was completed recently, is we found about 33% of our kids with trich had an anxiety disorder. The most common anxiety disorder that they had was GAD, actually. It wasn't OCD. And so that also means that there are lots of kids out there with trich who don't have anxiety symptoms driving trich. I think there's probably, especially with respect to OCD, there's repetitive behavior involved in both. Cognition is not nearly as prominent in trich. Usually they're not responding to a thought per se, but more to an itch or a feeling. Kids describe it different ways. And I'd say with trich as opposed to anxiety and OCD, it's much more likely the kids will describe the pulling as pleasurable in some way, as opposed to folks who wash their hands. They don't describe it as pleasurable. They describe it as reducing the likelihood of some feared outcome or just disgusting, and they want to reduce that feeling of disgust. So they're different in that way.
What about Tourette syndrome and other tic disorders? Is there a relationship to anxiety disorders?
Yeah, certainly there is. I'd say probably the comorbidity rates are similar, 40 to 50%. And OCD, in the case of Tourette's, there's a lot of comorbidity there. And sometimes it's really difficult with a kid who's got both conditions to know whether a repetitive behavior is a tic or whether it's a compulsion. And clinically, it becomes important to try to sort out which is which and provide the appropriate treatment depending on what you think the origin is.
Do we know what causes the disorders, and are there any factors that make someone more vulnerable or likely to develop these?
I think across all these disorders, even trich now, we've got some evidence suggesting that there's a higher concordance rate in monozygotic twins than there is in dizygotic twins, so there's clearly a genetic element to this. I think the place in the brain that's implicated is probably a little bit different from Tourette's to OCD. With OCD, it seems like it's mostly prefrontal, whereas in Tourette's, it seems like the basal ganglia, which is a midbrain structure, is more involved. I think that with all these conditions, we can certainly see kids who may well be born into families where the rates are higher. I think stress can be a trigger for some of these kids. Many times kids, when they're talking about when they started pulling, it's around some significant event, a move or a divorce. Not always, but we do see that stress, and also in particular with respect to maintenance, stress and responses to their pulling can have a big impact on whether they get more stressed out and pull more. And I think that becomes a target in treatment when we're talking about kids.
How common is this among children and adolescents?
It looks like trick in particular could be, and this is much higher than we would have guessed, is up to 1 to 2% of college students have enough pulling going on to suggest that they may well meet diagnostic standards for trick. For Tourette's, it really depends on how you define. So if you're really talking about the full-blown Tourette's syndrome with functional impairment, that might be 1 in 1,000, as opposed to for opening it up to chronic tics and milder cases, we may well be talking about more like 1 in 100. So it ranges depending on definition. But I'd say with all these conditions, they're more common than we used to think, and they affect kids more than we used to believe as well. Certainly trick, there's been a lot of work on functional impairment and trick, suggesting it's not a trivial disorder.
The term cognitive behavioral conceptualization of trichotillomania and Tourette syndrome, can you talk about what you mean by that and how it's applicable to children and adolescents?
Sure. I think with trick in particular, the cognitive behavioral conceptualization really looks at the maintenance of those symptoms over time. And in both disorders, in trick and in Tourette's, we think that there's a really important element of responding to urges. The urges, we think they're clearly of neurobiologic origin. They're, you know, in particular, the basal ganglia in Tourette's. But I think that the response to the urge is the person gets uncomfortable, they get an urge, an itch, depending on what language they're using, and then they engage in the pulling or they engage in the tick in order to make that feeling go away. And in trick in particular, it's also there's something pleasurable about the process. In Tourette's, it's much more I want relief from the bad urge, the bad feeling. In trick, there's more of a pleasurable aspect to it. And so when you respond to the urge by doing the behavior, from a learning theory standpoint, you strengthen those loops, you strengthen those connections, and then the next time that urge comes, you're more likely to engage in the behavior, and then you get this whole kind of vicious circle going in both disorders.
What can you tell clinicians about how to assess the disorders in their patients?
I think that for Tourette's it might be easier, and for chronic tic disorders it might be easier to see. So the kids, and usually with kids with Tourette's and tics, they usually start with facial tics that might be really obvious to parents. Eye blinking, rapid eye movements, those kinds of things, and generally the progression is from the head down, where the parents may well be seeing a kid who looks really fidgety, but they look fidgety in a very specific way. They fidget in the same manner repeatedly, and they start to have more complex tics as they go. With assessment, I mean, I think there are some good self-report instruments out there, certainly for trick. With Tourette's, I think it takes a good diagnostic interview, and it also takes a good diagnostician to look at the function of the behavior. So if a person's pulling a hair, you want to find out whether they can identify an antecedent feeling, what we call a premonitory urge in Tourette's, because that feeling, if they know that feeling is there, it buys them a little bit of time, treatment-wise, to do something different in the presence of that urge. And that becomes a big part of treatment as we go.
Let's talk a little bit more about treatment. Can you talk about what types of treatments are effective in general, and mm-hmm. then if you have any specifics for each disorder?
Sure. And the treatments that cut across both behavioral treatments for trick and behavioral treatments for Tourette's, they both involve a procedure called habit reversal training. Which is essentially what I was saying before, which is when you have an urge to do your behavior A, instead of doing behavior A, whether that's a tick or pulling your hair, we want to teach you to do a different behavior instead. And so basically using the first sign of the urge as an indication to start trying to do something different. In trick, that thing is usually something with their hands. With Tourette's, it's often a physically incompatible movement or posture that's in the spot where the tic usually occurs. It's what we call the competing response. And those treatments seem like they're quite effective. There's a big study that just came out last year in the Journal of the American Medical Association in Tourette's, suggesting that this behavioral treatment was more effective than supportive counseling. And there's also a study that will be coming out in trick. It's a small study. The Tourette's study was 126 patients, I believe. And the smaller study in TRIC, which is the first randomized controlled trial of any treatment for kids with TRIC, suggests that the behavioral treatment is better than what we called minimal attention control or a wait list. That paper is going to be coming out soon as well. That's out of our group. And the Tourette's, the big Tourette study was Passantini was the lead author, but it was a multi-site effort and really important. So behavioral interventions work. We also know in Tourette's that atypical neuroleptics work. They're better than placebo. The study that hasn't been done that should be is a direct comparison of the behavioral intervention to the medicines. The atypical neuroleptics sort of the best candidate. That study still needs to be done. In trichotillomania, we've got some evidence now that an N-acetylcysteine, which is a protein that seems to affect glutamate in the brain, which is a different system than we typically had been targeting with these disorders. We usually were thinking about it more like OCD and using serotonin reuptake inhibitors, and those didn't seem very effective. But this N-acetylcysteine in adults with TRIC was associated with about a 56% response rate from pre to post treatment, and it was a placebo-controlled trial. Placebo got minimal responding. What was interesting about it is not only did it reduce pulling behavior, but it also seems to have affected urges. So I think that's another place where we may think we've got a behavioral intervention that's effective and yet not perfect. We've got another now treatment for TRIC in particular that may also prove helpful. It would be nice to put those two things together. Now that study hasn't been done yet either.
Are there any other clinical or research implications you'd like to see for the future? Or do you have a wish list?
Oh, clearly those combined treatment studies have to be done in both disorders. I also think that maybe the most important thing to be done in our field in the next 10 years is to make the effective treatments more available. Right now, we have a pretty good idea of what these treatments ought to look like, and yet we have a big problem with people being able to find these treatments outside of the academic medical context. I think dissemination is really the next barrier. So we spent the last 20 years running randomized controlled trials attesting to efficacy of these procedures, but if you can't get them, then what good are they? And so I think that's the next step that I'm hopeful that both our group and many of the investigators who are here at this conference will be taking on as their next grand gesture to try to really make these treatments more relevant to families who have an affected kid.
Thank you, Dr. Franklin. That's something for everybody to look forward to in the future. Thanks again. And this is Jean Kaplan-Tycro for ADAA.